Outfit Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day as the great opening up continues all across the United States. All 50 states involved now everywhere in the country, except for Washington, D.C. Could it be that there are a lot of people in power in Washington, D.C. who have, let's put it this way, somewhat ignored some of the lockdown restrictions, so it's less pressing for those people to end the lockdown. Connecticut became one of the last states in the union to actually officially roll back some of the restrictions. Now there are questions about why would it be that the governor of a key swing state in this election would say that it was okay to now have public gatherings of up to 50 people, except if you're a church or synagogue or a mosque, you can't have 50 people. You can't have more than 10, which, by the way, is a particularly anti-Semitic, you'll pardon me for saying so, kind of dictate by the governor of Minnesota, the Democrat, Governor Waltz. Why? Because in Jewish tradition, you need more than 10 people to have a fully valid public service. It's called a minyan. And traditionally, it's 10 adult males. And so basically what he's saying is, okay, you can go ahead and do a restaurant out of doors with 50 people, but you can't do religious services. Why is he saying that? We will get to that. We'll also be talking to Gordon Chang about Kamala Harris and her new Senate resolution that would have condemned the use of the terms a Chinese virus or Wuhan virus as racist. By the way, this is a resolution that will not pass the Senate, not under Mitch McConnell's leadership, but also talk generally about the confrontation with China over coronavirus. Will that work in America's favor? And also we'll be speaking to a scholar from the University of Virginia about the pick for vice presidential candidates. Why do I say candidates plural? Because Kyle Condick says it's unsure who Joe Biden is going to pick as his running mate. He could pick one running mate that would utterly seal his defeat. We can get to that. But it also may be that President Trump might consider a replacement for Mike Pence. Why? We will get to that as well on a very busy day on the Medved Show. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. First of all, on the reopening, the Wall Street Journal has a good summary report on what's happening. They report that yesterday, Connecticut became the last state to loosen restrictions. Washington, D.C. remains under stay-at-home orders, and large parts of states, including major metropolitan areas, are still mostly shut. In most states, the reopenings are happening in phases. Most states are moving to reopen, says the Wall Street Journal, before they have met the criteria set by the Trump administration, such as a two-week decline in the number of new cases or in the percentage of COVID-19 cases that are positive. Now, this is interesting. I looked it up. What are the two states that had met the criteria formally, the 15 points that Trump put as a criteria for opening up? New Mexico had met it, and Michigan. President is headed to Michigan today. He's going to be speaking or touring a Ford plant, which has done a great job producing ventilators. He's also involved in a dispute with the Michigan Secretary of State and governor about mail voting, where there's a tremendous amount of misinformation, which we want to clear up here. The public health officials, reports the Journal, say measures including more increased testing capabilities and robust contact tracing programs are necessary for safely easing restrictions. But changing and often inconsistent information has hampered efforts to create a clear snapshot of how the U.S. is doing as a whole in a fight against the pandemic. And when you come to a question about that changing information and our difficulties in conducting this fight, there is just an amazing story from Columbia University that suggests that delays in implementing lockdowns, delays, particularly from the governor of New York, yes, the sainted Andrew Cuomo, and the mayor of New York, the not sainted Bill de Blasio, that those delays ended up costing at least 36,000 lives. It's an amazing story. And I think there are reasons to give it some credit. New York Times reports, if the United States had begun imposing social distancing measures 1 week earlier than we did in March, about 36,000 fewer people would have died in the coronavirus outbreak, according to new studies from Columbia University disease modelers. And if the country had begun locking down cities and limiting social contact on March 1st, that's 2 weeks earlier than most people started staying home, then the vast majority of the nation's deaths, about 83%, would have been avoided, the researchers estimated. Under that scenario, about 54,000 fewer people would have died by early May. The enormous cost of waiting to take action reflects the unforgiving dynamics of the outbreak that swept through American cities in early March. Even small differences in timing would have prevented the worst exponential growth, which by April had subsumed New York City, New Orleans, and other major cities, the researchers found. Jeffrey Shaman, who is an epidemiologist at Columbia, leader of the research team, said it's a big, big difference. That small moment in time, catching it in that growth phase, is incredibly critical in reducing the number of deaths. And I know that a lot of people who dispute the usefulness or effectiveness of the whole lockdown strategy say, oh, this is nonsense. But take a look at around the world. The nations that were quickest in implementing lockdown strategies have done phenomenally better than the United States and other nations in being able to curb and limit the damage of the pandemic. Talking about nations like Australia, it's a big nation of 30 million. Smaller nations like Israel, New Zealand, Taiwan, South Korea. And the idea that there is no effectiveness, there's no impact at all of the lockdown, that basically this thing would have ebbed anyway, that is completely rebutted by taking a look at information from around the world. Now, does that mean that we have, does that mean that it's not true that we've held on to the lockdown too long, or that it's been too severe, or it hasn't been flexible enough, or it's been unevenly applied? No, it doesn't mean that at all. I mean, look, obviously this is a disease where we needed a much less severe lockdown in Montana than we did in Manhattan. And that's the whole idea of federalism. But if you take a look at some of the stories that they include in this Columbia University study, it's truly, truly dramatic. Coming up, the president made a controversial announcement today. He said he tested, and he tested positive. But not in the sense that most people understand testing positive. But we will get to that. We'll let you hear the president directly. Coming up on the MedVed Show. Michael Medved show, we have made big strides in testing, which has greatly enabled this at least partial opening up, the end of the lockdown. And again, it's different in different states. Alaska, they've completely ended the lockdown, but they have very, very few incidents of coronavirus, and it's much less dangerous there. The Columbia University study, which I think is extremely dramatic because it does suggest that all of these lockdown costs and damages and pain and destruction that we have all suffered through, that may have ended up saving, as President Trump has said, literally hundreds of thousands of lives, and even conceivably millions. And their study says, as the New York Times summarizes it, the results show that as states reopen, outbreaks can easily get out of control unless officials closely monitor infections and immediately clamp down on new flare-ups. And they also show that each day that officials, particularly the governor of New York and the mayor of New York, waited to impose restrictions in early March came at a great cost. This is dramatic and important. In the New York metro area alone, 21,800 people had died by May 3rd. And that's because it wasn't until March 15th that Bill de Blasio closed the public schools. Cuomo only issued his executive order locking down the state on March 22nd. They say fewer than 4,300 would have died, not 22,000, if control measures had been put in place and adopted just a week earlier on March 8th. Today, on May 21st, the president gave a dramatic update on his own health, speaking with the press this morning. Listen.
And I tested very positively in another sense. So negative. This morning, yeah, I tested positively toward negative, right? So, no, I tested perfectly this morning. Meaning I tested negative.
Anybody test yet?
But that's a way of saying it. Positively toward the negative.
Okay, well, of course, he's tested negatively. He's taking hydroxychloroquine, and that would keep him perfectly safe, I'm sure. He also said yesterday, very briefly, that he would end the regimen that he's on with hydroxychloroquine in 1 or 2 days. After all of that, and this huge and deeply silly public debate about hydroxychloroquine and Joe Biden accusing the president of falsely of the president urging people to drink bleach, which he emphatically has not done. President Trump at his helicopter before he's headed out to Michigan also said this about his desire, which I support and share, to reopen churches. Listen.
I want to get our country back to normal. I want to normalize. One of the other things I want to do is get the churches open. The churches are not being treated with respect by a lot of the Democrat governors. I want to get our churches open, and we're going to take a very strong position on that very soon. Masks, yeah, including masks.
Okay, including mosques, sure. We're coming up to Eid al-Fitr, which is a big Muslim celebration of the end of Ramadan, this Ramadan like no other. President Trump yesterday spoke about voting by mail. And it's funny that he's going out to Michigan because he had attacked the Michigan Secretary of State, called her a rogue Secretary of State, because she was sending out ballots to everybody. And here's what he said yesterday about vote by mail.
Mail-in ballots are a very dangerous thing. They're subject to massive fraud. And by the way, you know, I don't want to put anybody on the spot. If you have anything to say about it, Asa or Laura, but how can you do that? You have people signing ballots. Who knows who's signing these ballots? They have a ballot. They pick the ballot. They take them out of mailboxes. They go around and accumulate them. They harvest. I guess the word is harvest them. And it was especially prevalent in California, and it's just not a fair situation.
Okay. He then went on to talk about the general dangers about mail-in voting. Here's the president.
When you send out 7.7 million mail-in ballots, there's forgeries. There's, frankly, duplication where they print ballots on the same kind of paper with the same kind of machinery, and you can't tell the difference. And they send in thousands and thousands of fake ballots. And I tell you what, this nation can't be going down that path because it's a very dangerous path to go down. Now, we just won a big election. You probably heard about this one in California, California 25. Mike Garcia, he just won a very big election, and that was ballots. And it was a very sort of the opposite. They won the case for ballots. He was doing very well because they're ballots. You see, he was way ahead in an area that, frankly, was not expected to go Republican. First time in 22 years that it's happened. They flipped from Democrat to Republican, California, the first time in 22 years that it happened. And they actually put machines in there in the last 3 days because they thought, meaning the Democrats, because they thought that might happen, but it didn't. But that was a case. That was a positive case. But mail-in ballots are very dangerous. There's tremendous fraud involved and tremendous illegality.
Okay. First of all, what he said about 22 years, a Republican had won that congressional seat 4 years ago. And it was just 2 years ago that the unspeakable Katie Hill won. She had flipped it from Republican, which it had been for years and years and years, to Democratic. And now, thank goodness, Mike Garcia has flipped it back. And secondly, I believe that about half the ballots that were counted in that victory for Mike Garcia, literally about half, were mail-in ballots. The president is just wrong on this. And first of all, he had attacked the Michigan Secretary of State for sending out mail-in ballots to everybody. She didn't. She sent out applications for mail-in ballots. And this is something, if you believe in federalism, and conservatives do, then states get to choose for themselves how they run their elections. And I live in one of five states that, by the way, has a Republican Secretary of State, really great Republican Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, who deserves re-election. But she has worked with these mail-in ballots. We've had mail-in ballots in the state of Washington in all of the 24 years that I've lived here. And again, the idea of voter fraud, we've had some problems with counting votes. But the problem is not with mail-in ballots in Utah, in Colorado, in Hawaii, or Oregon, where you have all mail-in elections. Now, of course, they have no elections in China. We'll be talking about that country coming up with Gordon Chang. On the Michael Medved show yesterday, media talking head John Harwood, a respected reporter, NBC, said that China was beating the United States diplomatically in terms of the world reaction to the coronavirus. And then we also have a U.S. senator wanting to pass a resolution against calling this a Chinese virus. What is going on? Nobody to help clarify who's better than Gordon Chang. Of course, a great friend of this show. You can reach him on Twitter at Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. And Gordon is the author of The Coming Collapse of China. Well, first of all, Gordon, is China winning the diplomatic war with the United States in terms of world leadership on the coronavirus?
I don't think so, Michael. I think if you went back to maybe January, you could say that Beijing's mass diplomacy, all the rest of it, they were winning friends for China. But then what happened is people started seeing that the diagnostic kits that China was distributing didn't work, had 80% failure rates. We saw that the masks and the other protective gear were substandard. And I think we had a great World Health Assembly meeting, because what we saw, Michael, was that China didn't want an investigation, or they said that they wanted one, but only afterwards. And the U.S.-sponsored resolution, along with Australia and some other countries, got about 144 co-sponsors to it. So clearly the United States is doing well these days, despite what people say. And I think that essentially we've got an effective diplomacy going forward.
All right. What about the Kamala Harris, who clearly wants to be vice president? We're going to be talking about that a little bit later in the show. But she's one of the finalists, apparently, for Joe Biden. She just introduced a Senate resolution that would condemn as racist a use of the terms Wuhan virus or Chinese virus. You a supporter of Senator Harris's resolution?
Oh, certainly not. I think, first of all,
I knew you weren't.
First of all, Chinese Americans have really got caught up in this, and they believe that any criticism of China is racist. And what they're doing is they're wrapping themselves in the flag, not the American flag, but the communist Chinese flag. And the Chinese Americans, and I'm one of them, have just got to come to terms with the reality that China caused this virus. It took steps to inevitably lead to the spread of the virus beyond China's borders. And we Chinese Americans should not be supporting Communist Party narratives. It also goes to say that Kamala Harris shouldn't be doing that either. And so I find that her actions are just reprehensible.
Yeah, it's staggering. I mean, I don't know if she wants to be China's choice for vice president, but there certainly would be no reason that I can see that she should be America's. In terms of the ongoing confrontation with China, the ongoing narrative, have they given up on trying to promote this idea that it was the American military who actually planted this coronavirus and are responsible for the devastation all around the world?
Actually, they have not given up on that narrative. We see daily from Beijing propaganda which tries to tar the United States about spreading, for instance, the virus, which one was about a couple of days ago from People's Daily Online. So there really is no let up in Beijing's efforts in this regard. And that shows the inherent hostility of the Chinese regime. You know, Kamala Harris, among other people, should remember that China declared a quote-unquote people's war on the United States. And although she may think that her California is not part of the rest of the country, nonetheless, China has her and their targets as well.
That's right. I guess it was North Korea who made the video of them sending missiles to Seattle and San Francisco. Gordon Chang, and everyone can reach Gordon at Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. In terms of the trade relationship, which almost nobody talks about now, are we going to see that the trade deal that President Trump has worked very hard to achieve with China, is that doable? The second stage, will the first stage likely fall apart? What's the likelihood that China basically reacts to trying to call them to account on coronavirus by basically punishing us with trade?
Beijing very well may do that. They've just punished Australia on trade because Australia was backed the U.S. call for an impartial, independent investigation on coronavirus. The phase one trade deal signed January 15th may or may not survive. We really don't know at this stage, Michael, largely because there's been a fair amount of propaganda from Beijing saying that China should be relieved of its core obligation, which is to buy an additional $200 billion worth of goods over a two-year period. But we don't actually know whether they're going to repudiate or not. And I'd actually think the Beijing officials really don't know either. But phase two is never really been in the cards. Remember, the phase two issues are the ones that were deferred because they could never come to agreement on them. So it was never going to be likely, but after the friction on coronavirus and other things, it becomes even less possible. Remember, these are things that Xi Jinping really wants, state subsidies, favoritism for state enterprises, and he's not going to give those up. So basically, if we want to get those things, we've got to get rid of communism in China.
Which, God willing, someday. Speaking of getting rid of communism in China, have they gotten rid of the virus? There continues to be talk of a second wave or a relapse in China that is being covered up. What's the real story?
Yeah, we don't know the real story because their information suppression campaign has been extraordinarily effective. But there are signs that the northeastern part of the country, large parts of it have been locked down, maybe 100 million people under some sort of stay-at-home order. Also, we know that there's a new cluster in Wuhan, which was the epicenter. No, they haven't beaten the virus, which shows you just how strong this bug is. We know that the bug in the northeastern part of China has actually mutated because it has a longer incubation period, but it's not as virulent from all that we can tell. But this is just sort of piecing together, all sorts of fragments, and that's largely because Beijing is not being very cooperative in sharing information.
In the minute left to us, is their version of a lockdown far more stringent than anything we have in the United States, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, they're serious. They will actually weld your door shut, and they've done that in certain cases in Wuhan. So they're tougher. And my daughter, who's in France, she's under a much stricter regime than I am here in New Jersey, which is saying something. So, yeah, they're much tougher in China.
Uh-huh. But they opened Shanghai Disneyland?
Yes, they did. I'm surprised by this because at the end of March, they started closing down attractions in Shanghai, about 30 of them, which had previously been opened. And Shanghai Disneyland was something that was shuttered. So apparently Shanghai is better now than it was, at the beginning of April.
Or would you go to Shanghai Disneyland?
I'm not going to China full stop. I think even with no disease, China is dangerous.
Would they welcome you? Would they welcome you in China, Gordon? Given your prominence as a China critic,
Michael, I am not going to find out.
And that seems to be a reasonable policy, considering some of the nightmare stuff you get even from Hong Kong. That's Gordon G. Chang at Gordon G. Chang on Twitter is how to reach him, the author of The Coming Collapse of China. And not collapse of the country, but of that communist regime. Wouldn't that be a blessing to hope for? We will be right back with more on voting by mail coming up on The Medved Show.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show.
On the Michael Medved Show, one of the things that I strenuously dislike, I was about to use the term hate, but no, we'll say strenuously dislike, is urban legends. And I know there are people who have said that urban legends is a racist term. Okay, so let's just say I generally dislike stuff that is commonly believed but is demonstrably untrue. It's shown to be nonsense. For instance, Democrats talk endlessly about voter suppression. Oh, there's Republican voter suppression. They want voters to show ID just to suppress minority voters. And oh, it's such an outrage. And okay, every time this has been studied, including studies involving Jimmy Carter, this is as an ex-president looking at it, There is no voter suppression. In both the presidential elections of 2008 and 2016, there was a higher percentage of black voters who actually came out and voted and had their votes counted than of white voters. And by the way, the same was true in 2018. It wasn't true in 2016. They didn't come out for Hillary in the same numbers African-American voters didn't. Okay, the point about this is, how is there voter suppression if these minority groups that are supposedly being suppressed are actually turning out in unprecedented numbers? It's nonsense. And it's also nonsense when Republicans claim there's massive voter fraud and the reason Democrats win elections is because of voter fraud. Now, let's talk about two different things. I think sometimes the Democrats play fast and loose when it comes to counting votes. And as happened in Minnesota with that race between Al Franken and Norm Coleman, where they kept recounting and recounting and recounting until they finally got the result they liked. They tried to do that with Bush v. Gore, by the way. And they were stopped by the Supreme Court of the United States. I'm very glad they were. They also did that out here in Washington with Dino Rossi versus Christine Gregoire in 2004. When Dino Rossi on election night had won the election by 1,000 votes. Okay, that's different. That, I think, is a real problem. But one of the reasons that I am confident, well, let me go to an email that came in from Lewis in Redmond. He says, "Hi, Michael, you don't think there has been voter fraud in Washington mail-in ballots? Then why is someone losing by 7% or so and mysteriously end up winning? I think there is for sure. I don't know who you're talking about." If you're talking about Jay Inslee versus Rob McKenna, look, I know Rob very well. I worked very hard on that campaign, as a matter of fact, and it was a frustrating campaign, but I don't think that Rob believes there was voter fraud, nor do I. And let me tell you why. The one office that is best run in state government is the Secretary of State's office, which has been controlled by Republicans for 30 years without interruption. Because you have Kim Wyman now, you have the great Ralph Monroe beforehand, and both people of impeccable integrity and very high competence. And the idea that there is some kind of endemic voter fraud in Washington state or in Oregon, or in Utah, where they have all mail-in ballots, or in Colorado, where they have all mail-in ballots, there is no evidence of it. And you may remember, and it's one of those things where also you have to pay attention to, well, presidential commissions. Do you remember President Trump, one of the first things he did when he became president is he claimed that there were 3 million illegal aliens who voted in the presidential election, and that was why Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. And he appointed a big commission, well-funded, headed by Kris Kobach, who had been the Secretary of State in Kansas. He just lost a gubernatorial race. He's now, I think, running for U.S. Senate again. But Kris Kobach, who was very much in agreement with President Trump, set out with his staff and his commission to find evidence of these 3 million illegals who had voted, committing voter fraud. And the truth of the matter is, they couldn't find any. They found less than 3,000 incidences looking all across the nation of phony ballots. And by the way, there is no reason to believe that voting by mail makes it easier for people who are illegally here in the United States to actually cast their votes. The thing about the state of Michigan, there are two issues here. Well, there are three. One is President Trump has said he's going to cut off aid to Michigan and Nevada if they proceed with plans for mail-in voting. Now, Nevada also has a Republican Secretary of State. So why are you tangling with her? The entire notion, by the way, of the president dictating to a state what its standards should be for conducting its own election. Imagine if Obama did that. It's outrageous. It's an affront to federalism and to common sense. And look, there are all kinds of advantages for Republicans for mail-in ballots. And one of them is that Republican voters, particularly Trump voters in the last election, tended to be older. Older. And what that means is that it is easier for older people, particularly in rural areas that are all going to be overwhelmingly Republican, to mail in their ballot and not have to mess with going to a polling place. Now, the one problem with mail-in ballots, and I'll acknowledge this, is the one problem with mail-in ballots is that it means that people are going to be voting early. And for last-minute developments, last-minute October surprises, they may have already voted. But with early voting, that's always a problem. And which is why I think it makes sense to advise people, when you get your mail-in ballot, take your time. Fill it out at the end of the process. And as long as you get it in that mail, so it's postmarked in time, it counts. Let's go to your calls to Gerald in Tacoma, Washington. You're on the Medved Show.
Hey, Michael.
Hello, Gerald. Hi.
I enjoy your show.
But
I have a question, though. If we don't have any, if we're not having voter fraud, how come we have to declare what party we are on the outside of the voter envelope?
No, we only had to do that. We only had to do that during the presidential primary, because that was the party rules. We don't have to declare that. What you'll see in your November ballot, Jim, you won't have to declare anything. You just vote. Because in terms of other than the presidential primary, for instance, it's extremely likely that Tim Iman, it seems to me, is going to be the Republican candidate, in effect, because he's so well known, and he's probably going to get more votes than the other candidates. But that doesn't mean that he is a Republican choice. He's a second place because we have the jungle primary, as they call it. Jim in Seattle, you're on the Medved Show.
Hey, Mike. So I was a little irritated earlier that
you
there?
Yeah.
Hello? A little irritated that you just blew off the, the Christine Gregoire win, because that, changed the whole course of the state. And that is the fraudulent voter ballot. But if you want to find fraudulent votes, I could tell you, ask your mailman. I could tell you an exact example back during the Obama election, that I have a teacher couple that got 5 ballots, and one of them was only their last name, which just baffled me. So I called the election office and asked them about that, and their only response was, well, if the customer has a question, have them give us a call.
Uh-huh. I believe that there are mistakes like that that happen? I do. But the fact is that if they were registered 5 different times, then they would have been able to do in-person voting, presumably, in 5 different places. In other words, the question is not, are elections perfect? The question is not, is it possible to have some fraudulent votes that come in by vote by mail? It is possible. But it is not riddled with fraud, while the other election system that we have is perfect and flawless. In all cases, when people have looked at this, the problems exist with counting ballots. They do. But the idea of massive election fraud that swings elections and changes the direction, that, God, thank God, has not been the history of this greatest nation on God's green earth.
With a lot of us spending